This is Jerry Bingham, host of Hush Loudly on WGN Plus.
You know, I definitely am able, I think, to sort of stand in the classroom and notice people who are maybe hesitant to engage fully, or notice those who are processing internally, who are thinking really deeply about our discussion, about the material, but maybe don't feel a need to share that verbally or to kind of talk through that in the way that other students do. Hi, this is Nate Crada, an assistant professor and director of the Higher Education Leadership Program at National Lewis University, and you're listening to Hush Loudly on WGN.
Welcome to Hush Loudly. This is Jerry Bingham. As always, we try to bring interesting guests doing interesting things to share their stories with us. And today I'm so excited, super thrilled to talk to Dr. Nathaniel Crada. And so I'm going to read a little bit about Nate before we get started. He is an assistant professor and the founding director of the Higher Education Leadership Department at National Lewis University, which I'm very familiar with. He has worked with institutions of varying sizes to promote educational justice as a path towards social justice through administrative leadership roles in first-year student transition programs, intercollegiate athletics, student affairs, and civic engagement. In addition, Nate served as a consultant on the development and assessment of multiple graduate and co-curricular programs for the study of higher education in nations with young systems of public education, including Nelson Mandela University in South Africa and ADA University in Azerbaijan. In addition to these accomplishments of practice, Nate's scholarship on timely issues regarding college teaching and post-secondary educational policy has been recognized through state and national media outlets, academic journals, and international academic conferences. His current work is centered on the ways in which state laws to allow concealed weapons on college campuses influence faculty behaviors. This study was the first of its kind to demonstrate that these so-called campus carry laws change teaching and faculty-student interaction in ways that are detrimental to student success, and has been recognized for both its practical contributions to the study of higher ed and from a methodological significance as an advancement in qualitative inquiry. He is an amateur home chef, a marathon runner, avid traveler, and co-parent to an elderly, curmudgeonly pug named Max. So, Nate, welcome to Hush Loudly.
Thanks so much, Barry. I'm so excited to be here. So I have to say, saying that you like having interesting guests, I feel like that's a lot to live up to for me. That's a lot of pressure.
Oh, no, you're interesting. Everybody's interesting. Everybody has a story. So first, Nate, you know, I have to ask you, are you an introvert?
Definitely. You know, growing up, I think my parents were probably a little concerned because I was, you know, kind of at a young age, you know, more on the quiet side and kind of introspective and all of those traits that we would associate with introverts. So that's only gotten, you know, probably stronger as I've gotten older. Yeah, definitely.
I think we all have those stories that go back to childhood and our preferences and how our parents may have tried to push us in different directions because, you know, we live in an extrovert rewarding world. So I think we all have these different stories about how we were different or knew we were different, whether we knew it was called an introvert or not. Have you had a personality test like Myers-Briggs or anything like that that has put you in that category, or is it just something you just have always known?
Yeah, no. So I've definitely, you know, taken my share of those personality tests along the way, and yeah, I remember. I think the first time I did the Myers-Briggs test, I think I was in high school probably, and you know, it reminded me. It was, you know, sort of at the advent of the internet, and there were, you know, tests online and quizzes, and you could log on and see. And I remember the first time I did it, it felt so affirming because it made it clear that there was you know, I wasn't just the weird quiet kid. I wasn't just the you know, the kid who preferred books and that sort of thing. But, you know, it was really validating. So yeah, definitely. And I think as I've gotten older, you know, it's confirmed every time. It's kind of more and more heading toward that introvert side of the spectrum for sure.
I love that you had that test early on, because I didn't have my first one until I think I was in my 30s at a company. And so all this time I knew I was different. I was okay with it. But you're right. When I took that test, it was so affirming and it was so empowering, and also helped me know I'm not alone. I'm not the only one. It's a bunch of us, and we have all these strengths and all this to add. So I love that you had yours possibly as a teen or in your early 20s, which, you know, I'm sure was very helpful at that time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. And it was, you know, I'll say too, it was, you know, with a teacher who did a great job, looking back on it, of making sure that it was affirming for all of us, right? The message, you know, not just for me, but for everybody in the class was, you know, sort of look at the diversity of experiences and personalities and ways of moving through the world. You know, isn't that great? Isn't that something to celebrate? And I think that for me made that something really sort of for the first time where it wasn't a drawback, right? This wasn't some sort of deficit. This was something that you know, could be useful and helpful and interesting and valuable and all of those things that you and I know to be true about introversion, for sure.
Mm-hmm. And let me ask you, so you talked about as a child and you may have preferred reading books or doing things that were a little different than other young people. How would you say now, as an adult, how does your introversion manifest? What are you doing? What introverted things do you do?
So, you know, I think, so from the intro there, you know, the things that you mentioned around, you know, I enjoy running, cooking, you know, those sorts of things, like that is the introversion for me. So after a long day, after a big work day and, you know, spending time kind of externally focused and in some ways sort of performing extroversion to, you know, move through the day. You know, for me, there's nothing better than coming home and putting on some music and, you know, spending a couple hours alone in the kitchen or going out for a long run. And that's really kind of my sort of quiet solitude, you know, time. That's my sort of meditative time, even to be able to, you know, shut everything else out and process what happened that day or, you know, prepare for the next day or whatever the case may be. So, you know, I think those are the biggest ones for me right now in terms of events or actions to take. But generally speaking, even, I think, you know, I'm comparing myself to my husband, who's a stone cold extrovert. And, you know, we definitely have some differences in that regard. But for me, it's a matter of, I think I move through life a little more quiet than he does, perhaps, and a little more, you know, I sort of am thinking through things a little bit more, whereas he's talking through things or acting through things, you know. But for me, it's a matter of kind of starting internally, making sure that I'm thinking before acting, thinking before speaking, really kind of processing first, and then figuring out based on that how to interact with the world around me.
And I think that that's very common, too, in dating and in relationships and in marriages. I find me, myself, I'm always seem to be paired with an extrovert. And mm-hmm. and even my girlfriends, my friends who are around me, I have a couple that are introverts, but more are extroverts. And I get something out of both relationships and relationships with both personality types. And I'm sure that they get something out of me. So it's something cool about that balance. And even as you talked about the diversity of just personality styles, so not only professionally and academically, but at home, it's just cool to have the views and the styles of different people working together, you know, all in love and all in fun. So I think that's very cool and very common. And I'm talking about academically, I brought that up because you are an educator. And you are teaching, you're advising, you're leading. Is your introversion an asset or is it a deficit? And if it is, either, how?
Yeah, you know, that's such a great question. And I think the answer is is sort of both. It's a little of column A and a little of column B. You know, definitely going back to those earlier, you know, personality tests and the career aptitude sort of tests that many of us take as teenagers and young adults, it was always one of the things that was suggested for me was the life of a professor, right? It is in many ways sort of a solitary position. It's something where I spend a lot of time in my office on research and these sort of solo pursuits. And so I think in that regard, it's definitely an asset, right? I can sit in my office all day writing or reading, and, you know, were it not for my watch reminding me to stand up once in a while, I would let the whole day pass that way and really enjoy it. So I think it's an asset, absolutely, in that regard. Where I see it sometimes being a deficit, and I hesitate with that term a little bit, but I think it's the best way to describe it, is in any of the sort of collective ways that we work together. So, you know, I'm just coming off of a faculty meeting that was lovely, and I appreciate my colleagues, but it was also kind of draining and sort of exhausting. You know, whenever I teach, our classes are 3 hours long, and that sort of ruins me for the day. You know, I'll teach a class and come home and need to, you know, take a nap and sort of sit and be quiet for a moment. And so I think in that regard, we could see it a little bit as a deficit or maybe as a challenge. It's a sort of a different accommodation afterward that becomes necessary. It's a different sort of, you know, way that I approach the rest of my day. It's to kind of balance out any sort of, you know, majorly extroverted kind of actions. But yeah, I think it's a matter of, I think, how you choose to look at it, how you choose to or are able to apply your personality in different settings, or, you know, that sort of piece to it. So it's for me really sort of both an asset and in some ways a challenge, depending on the setting, the situation. But, you know, certainly I think those personality tests and career aptitude tests were right, that being a professor is a pretty good fit for someone who is more on the introverted side.
Mm-hmm. I wonder about, so I know I met you probably about three and a half years ago, and I wonder when you were interviewing for the position, and this is something my introvert friends and I always talk about, how the role may be just for you, and you know that you can make an immediate impact, but society may perceive your personality type as not enough or not what they think that person should be. And I wonder, when you were interviewing, how was that? And some of us talk about how we masquerade as extroverts just to get the job. And then we know that our work will speak for itself once we get in there. But to get the interview and to get the job, we may have to change some things and perform as an extrovert. Have you had that experience either now, I mean, at your current role or previously?
Yeah, absolutely. I love that description of it as sort of a performative act, that, you know, you are sort of kind of putting on the mask of being an extrovert because that's the sort of the dominant trait in society. So yeah, absolutely. The, you know, faculty interviews for professor positions tend to be exhausting and marathon-like. You know, they tend to be a full day on campus meeting various people, if not multiple days, depending on the position and the institution. And so, yeah, you know, the interview at National Lewis was a full day, very, you know, bright and early, starting with breakfast with potential colleagues, and then, you know, a series of meetings, and then lunch with more potential colleagues, a presentation, you know, and met with the university's provost, the dean. You know, it becomes this really long day, definitely, of that performance of extroversion, because that's the expectation. And, you know, one of the things that made that a little better for me is the university, the associate dean who was sort of my shepherd that day on campus, had actually reserved a vacant office space for me for the day so that I could go back.
That's so helpful.
Oh, it was. It totally was. You know, I was able to go back between meetings and, you know, take 5 minutes, close the door, collect myself, catch my breath, and then exactly. And it was just the best. It was such a gift to me that he did that. And then, you know, funnily enough, because I knew this about myself, and I knew this was my sort of the way that day was going to hit me was to be sort of exhausting. You know, I then at the end of that day went back to my hotel and I, you know, opened a bottle of wine and had a nice bubble bath and watched some Netflix and had a glass of wine and just relaxed for the entire rest of that evening before going back home the next day. So, you know, it's those kind of things where I think introverts sort of carve out ways to move through the world or to accommodate and balance that need to perform extroversion. You know, I think the lesson there for me is, it's something that we can be supported in as well by people, you know, kind of making space for us to do that.
Yes. Wow. That's great. And back to your being a professor and presenting and teaching, you know, for some introverts, you know, we're all on the spectrum and some introverts are shy, some are not. But for some of us, it is difficult to get up in front of a room of people and speak. Is it difficult for you? Was it? Or, you know, and how have you worked that through? How have you managed that?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think, you know, for myself personally, it gets better over time. It's gotten, I think, more routine. And so, you know, certainly I used to be very nervous. I can remember in grad school, you know, anytime I had to speak in front of the class, whether that was a formal sort of presentation or even just, you know, raising my hand and making a comment or, you know, engaging in a discussion, it used to make me really nervous. And I used to notice myself even becoming a little bit shaky, just, you know, physically shaky even, and wondering why that was. You know, like there was no reason for me to be nervous to speak in class. There was no, you know, I'm in a room of colleagues and people who are supportive, but nonetheless, it still happened. And so over time, certainly that's gotten, that has sort of dissipated for me. I definitely, you know, don't find that anymore. But I think what I still hold from that is an ability to really kind of key in on that happening for other students. So, you know, I definitely am able, I think, to sort of, you know, stand in the classroom and notice people who are, you know, maybe hesitant to engage fully, or notice those who are, you know, processing internally, who are thinking really deeply about our discussion, about the material, but maybe don't feel a need to share that verbally or to, you know, kind of talk through that in the way that other students do. I think, you know, quite often faculty or teachers, you know, see the people who are sitting back in a discussion as the people who are not engaged or maybe not paying attention or whatever the case may be. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my experience as a student helped me realize that that's not the case always. Mm-hmm. You know, it could be that students are, you know, thinking and cognitively engaging, you know, really intensely with what we're doing, but that may just not manifest itself as a, you know, verbal discussion. And that can be perfectly fine, because in fact, we know that to sort of force a student to participate in discussion or to call on them out of the blue would actually be counterproductive in some cases for introverted students. So for me, it takes that approach where I think I'm a little more predisposed to keep an eye out for students who are like me and who are certainly engaging, certainly, you know, paying attention. They're great students, but maybe that's just not, you know, coming out loud. And so I always try to tell students that, you know, in my classes, you know, I'm never going to call on you. You always have the right to remain silent, because we know that for some students, that's the right approach. Mm-hmm. And so I want to definitely model that.
Well, I commend you for that. That is wonderful. And I want to make a comment about, there is a colleague of mine who doodles during presentations and during instruction. And it was weird to me at first, but I found out she hears and listens and is absorbing everything. And mm-hmm. we talked about it at one point, and she talked about how something about it helps her focus and helps her as she processes. And so that may look to some professor as this girl isn't even listening. She's doodling. And so, you know, it's interesting that we all process, we all learn, we all hear in different ways. And she is an introvert as well. So I'm glad that you are recognizing that, because obviously you see it in yourself. And on the flip side, I wonder about, so we also have the extreme extroverts who can't stop talking. And so when you have a classroom and you have someone who can't stop talking, I mean, there are those introverts. We may not want to say anything anyway, but with a person who's constantly talking, we just let them have the floor. And so how do you deal with that dynamic? Or are you able to sort of not minimize, but how do you manage that, someone who does all the talking and completely tries to, you know, monopolize the conversation and the happenings of the class that day?
Yeah, you know, that's such a good question. I chuckle when you ask that, because I think any of us who have been in any sort of classroom setting with other adults certainly can think of that person, right? There's inevitably, I think, one, you know, a person in every class that, you know, really, really does kind of talk at length. And you know, it's funny. So I think, you know, when I was a student, that was the person who was probably really irritating to me.
Yes, very.
As, you know, a professor or a teacher, you have to just try hard not to be irritated by prospective students. And so, you know, for me, I think it's a matter of noticing them just as much as I notice those introverts that we talked about earlier sitting back, right?
Yeah.
For me, I can notice that student talking constantly or being the first person to answer questions or the first person to talk, you know, on any kind of discussion point. For me, I see that as, you know, they're not necessarily trying to monopolize. They may not even realize that they're monopolizing the conversation. Quite often what they're doing is thinking out loud in the same way that, you know, your colleague might doodle to be thinking, or might listen intently and process fully in a way that is not visible to the rest of us in the room. I think those extroverted students, or anytime those students are, you know, really talking at length and talking to the point that might get tiresome for other people, you know, I see that as them also processing. It's just a different way of doing that. And so for me, what I try to do is balance that out, because I know that, you know, certainly, like you said, there are some introverts in the room who will see that as sort of a relief, or, you know, them being, you know, kind of off the hook of having to talk because someone else will take the floor. Certainly I've been there too, and appreciate that. But I think what happens sometimes is we can all listen to that person or to that set of people and assume that that's the right way to think, or that's the correct answer, or it's the you know, the best way to move about, you know, thinking about whatever that topic or situation is, just because it's the most vocal. And it's not necessarily always, you know, the one right answer or the best answer. And so for me as a teacher, I try to think through, you know, how can I create conditions in a classroom setting where everyone feels comfortable to process and participate. And so what that looks like is, you know, creating activities in a classroom where we can engage with the material and one another in different sorts of ways to make sure that we're able to each perform, you know, our understanding, our engagement with the material and the content in whatever way is most comfortable. So, for example, you know, I might pose a topic or a question or a situation to the class. And then rather than just having one large class discussion about it, where, you know, inevitably the extroverts will sort of kind of take over and introverted students might kind of sit back, what we might do instead is break that down into a smaller sort of think, pair, share activity, where we would first ask students individually, you know, silently to think through that situation or case or whatever the task at hand is. And then after a couple of minutes of collecting their own thoughts, turn to a neighbor and discuss just the two of you and come to your own, you know, paired sense of understanding. And then we'll come back together as a whole class, and those who want to can share their individual or paired discussions. And then that way, you know, we're able to first and foremost make space for the introverts to have their time to sort of quietly think and process and come to some understanding. And then it becomes this really lower stakes way to enter that conversation, because we know that we're all sort of on the same page. We've all had that time to process, whether it was individually and internally, or in a paired, you know, kind of verbal manner. So little things like that that you pick up along the way that are ways that we can, you know, really balance so that everyone in the classroom is, you know, at least on this personality dimension, able to engage and connect with the material in a way that meets their needs as best we can.
What a thoughtful, mindful strategy, and something that could be implemented anywhere. So I love that, and I hope people are listening and will consider something like that. That's wonderful.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, it's something that, you know, could easily be a strategy that you replicate in your office meeting, your team meeting, at work, whatever the case may be. That think, pair, share strategy is effective, you know, even outside of classrooms, certainly.
Thank you for that. And now I would love to switch gears and talk about COVID-19. As you know, we are in the middle of a pandemic that has altered our economy, has affected the lives of many as we've lost friends and family. And what I want to talk about as related to introversion is the whole social distancing and the shelter at home, shelter in place. And so I want to know, how has it impacted you? We keep seeing all these jokes about the introverts are cruising through all of this. I see all these funny things on Twitter, and, you know, extroverts are having a hard time. And I even see that with my friends who need to see me more, and they might need to talk to me more. And we're having Zoom cocktail hours and all of these things because they need that. And so I'm curious about, how is it impacting you? How are you managing as an introvert in terms of socialization and the restrictions we have, and also as it relates to teaching and leading a department?
Yeah, that's, you know, I wish I had the answer to that. It's challenging. So, you know, first and foremost, we are safe and well and employed, and I think we in my household are probably in as good of a position as we can be in. And so first and foremost, you know, really thankful for that, and certainly wish the same for you and everyone listening as well. I think, you know, at first, so let's see, it's May that we're talking. We've been doing this for you know, nearly 2 months or so now. Mm-hmm. And I'll, you know, I think at first it was a little bit of a relief. There was this little moment for me at first of, you know, sort of sanctioned mandatory introvert time. And and it's great, you know, like there was a maybe a week or so where that was fantastic. And, you know, and I think for me it was almost sort of permission to not be on guard. It was permission to live into being an introvert. Yeah. Right? I think there's a lot of time where, you know, I mentioned my husband is an extrovert, and there's, you know, for many years, I think we've been trying to figure out, you know, how is it that we balance that? How do we make sure that he's getting the extrovert time that he needs, I'm getting the introvert time that I need, and, you know, how can we be a good kind of balance and counterweight for one another? So, you know, at first for me, what this looked like was a feeling of sort of relief that I didn't have to pretend to be an extrovert for a minute, right? I didn't have to worry about whether I was being boring or, you know, whatever the thoughts are that go through our mind that, you know, may not be fully logical, but nonetheless. So at first it was great. And I think certainly for our, you know, extroverts in our life, we could see that taking a toll. You know, it's it leads to, I think, we're seeing a lot of certainly conversation around mental health and around that need for socialization that we all have, regardless of our personality style. We are innately social creatures, and so as these weeks have gone on, you know, it has gotten harder. It's gotten really refreshing to have. I've had those, you know, Zoom or FaceTime happy hours, certainly game nights with family and friends over the internet, and those sorts of things that really have been surprisingly refreshing and surprisingly sort of fulfilling for me. You know, that's been good. I think, professionally, you know, we at National Lewis University are fortunate. So, you know, there's a lot of uncertainty in the world. There's a lot of uncertainty, certainly, in the post-secondary education sector in terms of just what this pandemic and the, all of the effects of it will hold for us in the future. I think at our university, because we were already substantially online, we have multiple campuses in the Chicagoland area, we have a campus in Florida, and a significant number of online students around the country, you know, we were sort of primed for this. We already had a lot of Zoom meetings, we already, you know, worked remotely to a degree, we already taught remotely to a degree. So in some ways, this was sort of just a progression of things that we had already been fortunate to put into place. Where I worry about it is, you know, I think our faculty and students who don't feel that sense of relief here, right? That, you know, for those first couple of weeks where it was sort of this pleasant time of all of us being introverts, after that you start seeing it really take a toll on people, and particularly with our students and faculty, you know, we think about over-Zooming. We think about, you know, is it really productive? So, you know, I mentioned that our classes meet for 3 hours, you know, typically in person on campus. Well, you can't just do 3 hours on Zoom and have it be the same effectiveness, right? You can't sit for 3 hours and pay attention to the computer screen. It's not the same thing. And so where for a moment, I think introverts had our time in the sun to be, you know, everybody was sort of forced to be an introvert, like I said, for a while. You know, we're now seeing, I think, even that while that's something we may have wished for, you know, for a number of years, that, oh, we would finally be the dominant personality. Mm-hmm. You know, I think we now see that balancing that, regardless of whether it's, you know, more introverts in society or more extroverts, what matters is how we balance those two, how we balance and make it not the case that extroverts have to, you know, become exhausted by performing introversion, you know, during this pandemic as well. So, yeah, I mean, I'm sort of just rambling now, but nonetheless, I think there's something there to that idea that we move through life typically with, you know, most people being extroverts and that being sort of this dominant trait that we see in society as sort of preferred or kind of the way that most people move through. Well, when that shifted and, you know, we became all, you know, sort of mandatory introverts, we now see the reverse of what that typically causes. And so I think the lesson there is, you know, again, making space for all of us to have what we need out of our interaction.
Amazing. Amazing. Yeah, we're learning so much about this, the pandemic, as it relates to everything with our economy, personalities, I feel like everything.
Absolutely.
So in closing, you've given a ton of advice, I feel, but I just wanted to ask you, is there any other tip? Is there any advice that you'd like to give? It could be personal, professional, academically, to an introvert who may be listening.
Yeah. So two things. I think first, my advice, and this is certainly easier said than done, but my first piece of advice would be to fully sort of own yourself, your personality, your needs, and recognize that they don't have to be a deficit the way that they are typically framed. So, you know, if you're someone who is an introvert listening and you're, you know, in a position where you have to move through life being an extrovert or performing extroversion, you know, it's okay and it's necessary to advocate for yourself and for what you need in order to be successful in whatever that role is that causes you to live in an extroverted space. And then my second piece of advice, you know, sort of related to the pandemic, and this would be for all of us, is, you know, I think introverts have this innate talent of knowing what's going on internally for themselves. We, you know, tend to be really introspective. We tend to be very inquisitive and aware of ourselves, our bodies, our feelings, our, you know, mental state. And so with all of this going on, you know, I'm always an advocate for people taking good care of their mental health and seeking help for any kind of mental health concerns that they have. But I think in this pandemic, we all are in that space where, you know, for any of us, there is value always in asking for help. And so I think if you're an introvert or extrovert listening who recognizes that you know, perhaps you don't feel like yourself, and perhaps you're not feeling 100% comfortable with your time of, you know, mandatory introversion or being indoors and staying away from, you know, your family or other large gatherings. It's important to recognize that and to ask for help and to, you know, reach out to any of those sorts of resources that are available to make sure that we're all maintaining our health and wellness, you know, not only physically, certainly, but mentally and emotionally as well.
Well said. Well said. Thank you so much, Nate. This has been amazing. We appreciate you joining us on Hush Loudly and maybe talking to you again in the near future.
Great. Thanks so much, Jerry. And thank you so much for your work here and for creating a space that really does recognize and affirm and support introverts in society. And I so appreciate you having me.
Thank you.
Check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/introvertshushloudly. And listen to past episodes at WGNRadio.com or HushLoudly.com.